Chapter 7. Thus was helped on an event which the conduct of the mutually attracted ones had been generating for some time. It is unnecessary to give details. The ST Foot left for Bristol, and this precipitated their action. After a week of hesitation, she agreed to leave her home at Creston and meet Vanycock on the ridge hard by, and to accompany him to Bath, where he had secured lodgings for her, so that she would be only about a dozen miles from his quarters. Accordingly, on the evening chosen, she laid on her dressing table a note for her husband, running thus: "Dear Jack, I am unable to endure this life any longer, and I have resolved to put an end to it. I told you I should run away if you persisted in being a clergyman, and now I am doing it. One cannot help one's nature. I have resolved to throw in my lot with Mr. Vanycock, and I hope, rather than expect, you will forgive me." Then, with hardly a scrap of luggage, she went, ascending to the ridge in the dusk of early evening. Almost on the very spot where her husband had stood at their last tryst, she beheld the outline of Vanycock, who had come all the way from Bristol to fetch her. "I don't like meeting here, it is so unlucky." ... she cried to him. "For God's sake, let us have a place of our own. Go back to the Milestone, and I'll come on." ... he went back to the Milestone, that stands on the north slope of the ridge, where the old and new roads diverge, and she joined him there. She was taciturn and sorrowful when he asked her why she would not meet him on the top. At last she inquired how they were going to travel. He explained that he proposed to walk to Mellstock Hill, on the other side of Casterbridge, where a fly was waiting to take them by a cross-cut into the Ivel Road, and onward to that town. The Bristol Railway was open to Ivel. This plan they followed, and walked briskly through the dull gloom till they neared Casterbridge, which place they avoided by turning to the right at the Roman Amphitheatre and bearing round to Durnover Cross. Thence the way was solitary, and open across the moor to the hill whereon the Ivel fly awaited them. "I have noticed for some time," she said, "a lurid glare over the Durnover end of the town. It seems to come from somewhere about Mixon Lane." ... the lamps, he suggested. "There's not a lamp as big as a rushlight in the whole lane. It is where the cholera is worst." ... by Standfast Corner, a little beyond the cross, they suddenly obtained an end view of the lane. Large bonfires were burning in the middle of the way, with a view to purifying the air, and from the wretched tenements with which the lane was lined in those days, persons were bringing out bedding and clothing. Some was thrown into the fires, the rest placed in wheelbarrows, and wheeled into the moor directly in the track of the fugitives. They followed on, and came up to where a vast copper was set in the open air. Here the linen was boiled and disinfected. By the light of the lanterns, Laura discovered that her husband, and was standing by the copper, and that it was he who unloaded the barrow, and immersed its contents. The night was so calm and muggy that the conversation by the copper reached her ears. "Are there many more loads tonight?" ... "There's the clothes o' they that died this afternoon, sir. But that might bide till tomorrow, for you must be tired out." ... "We'll do it at once, for I can't ask anybody else to undertake it. Overturn that load on the grass and fetch the rest." ... the man did so, and went off with the barrow. Mombry paused for a moment to wipe his face, and resumed his homely drudgery amid this squalid and reeking scene, pressing down and stirring the contents of the copper with what looked like an old rolling pin. The steam therefrom, laden with death, traveled in a low trail across the meadow. Laura spoke suddenly. "I won't go tonight after all. He is so tired, and I must help him. I didn't know things were so bad as this." ... Vanycock's arm dropped from her waist, where it had been resting as they walked. "Will you leave?" apostrophe, she asked. I will if you say I must. But I'd rather help to. Apostrophe, there was no expostulation in his tone. Laura had gone forward. Jack, apostrophe, she said, I am come to help. The weary curate turned and held up the lantern. Oh, what, is it you, Laura? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked in surprise. Why did you come into this? You had better go back, the risk is great. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but I want to help you, Jack. Please let me help. I didn't come by myself, Mr. Vanicock kept me company. He will make himself useful too, if he's not gone on. Mr. Vanicock. Apostrophe, the young lieutenant came forward reluctantly. Mr. Mombry spoke formally to him, adding as he resumed his labor, I thought the ST foot had gone to Bristol. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we have. But I have run down again for a few things. Apostrophe, the two newcomers began to assist, Vanicock placing on the ground the small bag containing Laura's toilet articles that he had been carrying. The barrowman soon returned with another load, and all continued work for nearly a half hour, when a coachman came out from the shadows to the north. Beg pardon, sir, apostrophe, he whispered to Vanicock, but I've waited so long on Millstock Hill, that at last I drove down to the turnpike, and seeing the light here, I ran on to find out what had happened. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lieutenant Vanicock told him to wait a few minutes, and the last barrel load was got through. Mr. Mombry stretched himself and breathed heavily, saying, there, we can do no more. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as if from the relaxation of effort he seemed to be seized with violent pain. He pressed his hands to his sides and bent forward. Ah! I think it has got hold of me at last, apostrophe, he said with difficulty. I must try to get home. Let Mr. Vanicock take you back, Laura. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he walked a few steps, they helping him, but was obliged to sink down on the grass. I am afraid you'll have to send for a hurdle, or shutter, or something, apostrophe, he went on feebly, or try to get me into the barrow. Apostrophe, but Vanicock had called to the driver of the fly, and they waited until it was brought on from the turnpike hard by. Mr. Mombry was placed there. Laura entered with him, and they drove to his humble residence near the cross, where he was got upstairs. Vanicock stood outside by the empty fly a while, but Laura did not reappear. He thereupon entered the fly, and told the driver to take him back to Ivel. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.